You are listening to the Fancy Free podcast, where my girlfriends and I tell our most embarrassing funny stories so that we all feel less alone in our imperfections. I'm Joanne Jarrett, and I'm your host. Today, I have with me a new girlfriend, Candace Good, and I cannot wait to have this chat with her. It sounds like she has a lot of fun stories to tell us. Candace is a child and adolescent psychiatrist who currently specializes in college mental health. She also maintains a private office where she focuses more on holistic care, primarily meditation, yoga, and other healing arts for stress reduction. Candace, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. Well, I have so many questions. So you are a child and adolescent psychiatrist. God bless you. That must be really challenging and really rewarding. Tell me a little bit about that. How did you get involved in that?
Well, actually, I was going to be an OBGYN when I was in medical school. My last rotation was on a child psychiatry inpatient unit. And I just sort of found it so interesting to be able to hear about family stories. There was a huge need for child and adolescent psychiatrists. I ended up having a daughter around the same time I started my child and adolescent fellowship. So I was learning about being a parent at the same time I was working with other people on their parenting, particularly.
Nothing like trial by fire there. Sheesh.
Yeah, do everything at once. I just sort of dive in. That's been my MO.
Oh my gosh.
Medicine can be repetitive. Not everybody realizes that. So in psychiatry, everybody's family situation, their story is a little bit different, and how you adjust their medication and therapy regimen is all very sort of unique to them. So I really enjoyed the art of it, I guess.
Okay, nice. We are going to dive right into some of your not so fancy moments. As you know, the point of this podcast is to share our not so fancy moments with the listeners so that we can all feel less alone in our imperfections and all realize that we aren't the only crazy fools out there who do silly things and have embarrassing situations. So what do you have for us today? What are some of your not so fancy moments?
Well, the stories I'm going to share with you are about my parenting as a child and adolescent psychiatrist. I think everybody wonders, what do I do? Also, in addition to my daughter, I have two rescue dogs. Their names are Flip and Abbott. They're actually from the same litter. We adopted them about 2 years apart. So one of them is deaf and got brought back to the rescue. So he has some special needs, and they've sort of become my babies since my daughter is now 20 and in college.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's nice to have something to take care of still when the kids are up and out.
Yeah, and I really like that your podcast, I think other people have shared some parenting fails as well. And I think it's important for people to hear them, because anyone who's a caregiver struggles. And oftentimes you don't hear that side of it until you're part of the club and sort of out yourself.
Yes. That's
you know, and I think working moms, regardless of our medical specialty or our profession, often feel we're not doing enough for our kids' schools.
Yeah.
There was a time when I was volunteering for my daughter's drama club. I actually was so relieved because I got to the school, the high school, an hour before showtime. And it was a big night because she was in charge of all the props for the play. Oh my. So not a scene was going to go off without her. And, you know, as a doctor, getting to places early or even on time was not usually my forte. So I had certainly end up missing some field trips and class presentations over the years. But there I was, like an hour early, like getting ready to don my smock to sell 50-50 raffle tickets. And the assistant director of the play and a student rushed over to me, and they both look really worried. They're like, "Where's Hannah? Is everything okay?" And right then I was like, "Oh my God, I left my daughter at Barnes and Noble."
No. You were there, but she
right.
wasn't.
So obviously I make my living off of parenting advice, and I forgot my own kid. She was a teenager. She wasn't driving yet. And I had dropped her off at the store to work on some homework before the play opened that night. And she forgot her cell phone and was just too embarrassed or scared or whatever to ask someone to use their phone. And yeah, I live in a small town, and there are so few child and adolescent psychiatrists. I actually was treating a lot of students that were there that night, and their parents were outside like setting up, and everybody knew what I had done. And they're sort of like, "We pay this lady for parenting advice."
No, they're probably thinking, oh, thank God, she's normal. She's normal. Thank you. We can live up to her at least a little bit. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so what did you do? Did you rip off your smock and hightail it back to the Barnes & Noble and pick your daughter up?
I called my husband, and he went and got her, and she got there on time because they're supposed to be there 2 hours before the show. So the show went off without a hitch, but it was really a moment that made me think about how hard I was working to run around trying to do it all and still missing the mark a little bit. So it was really one of the times I started focusing more on mindfulness.
Yeah, you're realizing I am spread too thin here. I am making mistakes that I don't accept.
Yeah, and I'm still spread pretty thin and doing my best. But I think I've learned to be kinder to myself. I had shared that story at an open mic night at a place downtown. And it's so fun because afterwards, other women were running up to me to tell me their stories. You know, like I locked my 2-year-old in a room and they couldn't get out.
Yes, this is exactly why I'm doing this podcast. So you were brave enough to go to an open mic night. Tell me about that.
Well, I go to a writer's meeting and had taken a mindfulness writer's class at like this creative collective in the town where I live. And it's just a really fun space where people can share stories. And I think it really increases your confidence when you can share and really see how your stories can affect people in ways you don't expect. One of the women that was at the open mic that night, she actually read after me, was a young woman, and she wrote a letter to her postpartum depression. And gosh, the story was just so touching and brave. And as someone who works in mental health, I just really thought about how powerful it would be for people who work in mental health to speak openly about such personal topics. So that's when I decided to start writing about my own obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD, which most people have heard of, and that you obsess about bugs or safety and maybe wash your hands a lot or check things a lot. So just to be clear, OCD itself isn't funny. I felt really tortured by my symptoms for a long time. But when I'm able to treat myself with some kindness and humor around it and just sort of see it as this quirky thing my brain does, it's essentially gone away. So I have some funny stories about that I'm happy to share as well.
I would love to hear your stories about that.
Well, I decided to tell the one about my dog since we're going with the whole theme of my babies, my daughter Hannah and my dogs. I do have some funny stories about, I get convinced at times that I have lice, and I get really focused on there being bugs and food, to the point that I always laugh that I'm every Tupperware lady's dream because everything in my house is in my plastic container. So you can imagine sometimes that it's hard to get to the hospital because there are definitely some bugs there that can kill you, MRSA and C. diff.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Luckily, as a psychiatrist, I don't really have to lay hands on people for that type of medical care. But if I'm going through any type of change, like for example, 2 winters ago, I was going through a pretty major job change. I was leaving a rather large group practice I was actually one of the owners of. You know, we have over 60 employees. To go for just a little bit calmer schedule in college mental health, it's not calmer during the actual semester, but summers and that kind of thing. But I started to get really focused on my dog's safety. And I started to wonder, what if I forgot my dogs outside? Like, you know how you put them out in the morning before you leave for work?
I have this actual obsession.
Right. And I think anybody who doesn't think they have checking compulsions, I mean, just think about your phone. How often do we make sure we have our phone with us before we go somewhere?
I live in Montana. If I left Flossie out overnight, she would not survive.
Right.
You know, and so I worry about that. Yeah. I mean, I totally relate.
So the point is, you know, stuff happens. I left my daughter at Barnes & Noble once. I could totally see myself letting my dogs out. So I'm trying to leave for the hospital, but I'm getting in my car and I'm not 112% sure that they're both in the house. And then I literally will get this image come in my mind of a newspaper. I'm not sure how many people read newspapers anymore, but a headline that says deaf dog freezes in physician's backyard. And, you know, as a psychiatrist, I'm trained to treat OCD, which, you know, just adds to the humor a bit, the irony, I guess. The main treatment for OCD is exposure and response prevention, meaning that you have this thought and you decrease the anxiety around the thought by stopping yourself from doing the compulsion, which is the checking. So instead of checking on the dogs, I should really just sit in my car and get to work and let the anxiety decrease. But, you know, sometimes that's hard to do when you're under a lot of stress. So normally the dogs will come to the window to sort of see what I'm up to. But of course, that day that I was trying to get to work and already running late, they didn't come to the window. And I did not want to get back out of the car because I felt like if I went back into the house, I would lose this epic battle with my thoughts, right? So... So I started tooting the horn to see if I could get the dogs to come to the window. So normally they'll be looking at me from inside of the house, sort of like, hey, where are you going? When are you going to be back? But of course, that day they weren't. So I tooted my horn and no dogs. All right. So I sit there for a couple more minutes. I tooted the horn again. So the one dog comes. The other one's deaf, remember? So I'm sitting there and I still feel, gosh, I just need to know that he's okay. So I start gesturing to the one dog to go get the other dog, like, go get your brother, like pointing him in the right way. And yeah, that didn't work either.
Does your auditorily unchallenged dog have these sign language skills?
No. So I just, at that point, I just headed to the hospital. But of course, that creeps in your mind throughout the day, whether the dogs are in or out.
So your dog doesn't know sign language. Your dog doesn't know, hey, go get the other dog.
No, he's sort of like, you know how dogs cock their head to the side and they look at you like WTF?
Yeah,
like, yeah, that's the look. I got the canine version of that, whatever that is.
And you're like, you are a terrible herding dog. Go herd your brother and bring him to the window right now. He was having none of it. Okay, well, I have to know. Was he in or out?
They were in, of course. They're always in. There's no way that the little deaf one's being left outside. He likes his treats too much when he comes in.
Okay, you have another story about your dogs, I think.
I do. Well, I had talked about how I had gone through that big job change and actually, I was really proud that I was able to maintain friendships with my former colleagues. That was really important to me. And because I had worked at the company for part of the year, they invited me to the Christmas party, which was great. I hadn't seen everyone for months and I was excited to go, but a little bit nervous too, because I did leave and I had mixed, you know, I think whenever you're changing jobs, you have mixed feelings about things. So I actually met somebody for a drink ahead of the party, and I'd popped like a Prilosec, omeprazole before I went, just because I was sort of nervous. That's an acid blocker, just to help calm my stomach a little bit. So once I was there and interacting with everyone, I was really having a great time. And then all of a sudden, I had this premonition, like, oh my gosh, I have to get out of here. And it wasn't like I was having a panic attack, but I felt like if I'm not out of here within 5 minutes, I'm going to be falling down drunk, even though I barely drank anything.
Weird.
Yeah. And this whole idea of this corrective emotional experience with these people, they'd just be over because they'd think I left because I had some kind of drinking problem. And
oh my gosh, yes. You're like, I do not want to complicate this situation.
Right. So one of my friends was leaving and he and his wife, they drove me home. But when I say they drove me home, I was more sprawled out across their back seat. And when I got home, I announced to everyone I was going to throw up, but I actually took a nap on the bathroom floor.
Okay.
And so the next day I was sort of like, well, what was all that about?
What happened there?
Yeah, my stomach was still messed up and I took another acid blocker and I just couldn't get this incident out of my head. This whole nervous stomach thing and tiredness lasted a couple more days, so I kept taking omeprazole, the acid blocker. And then the next day, I twisted off the lid. I actually looked down at the bottle, and I could see on the lid there was a picture of a dog, a cat, and a horse. I'd been taking my dog's pain medication.
Oh, my gosh.
And, of course, it had interacted with the alcohol, so that was the mystery was solved on that one.
Wow. I'm so glad you figured that out. That could have been a downward spiral that didn't end until you got to the bottom of the bottle.
Well, and then of course, everyone has advice like, why don't you keep your pills separate from your dog's pills? I'm like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense now.
Now I do.
So now we each have our own little pill case, and I've only had to spit out his seizure medicine a couple of times.
Okay, so here's where I get freaked out. This is exactly how I would have reacted to that discovery. I would have thought, okay, I've heard that if you give dogs ibuprofen, it can give them kidney failure. What kind of failure am I going to get from taking dog medication? And I would have totally called poison control.
The medicine was actually gabapentin, which I prescribe as a psychiatrist, so I was pretty familiar with it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that one's okay. But oh my gosh, you were unknowingly on gabapentin.
Yeah.
That's significant. Even though it is useful in humans for chronic pain and some, I think, mood stabilization, I don't know. But it can cause, you know, unclear thinking and very, you know, fatigue.
Well, I wouldn't have knowingly combined it with alcohol, that's for sure.
Oh, of course. Of course. Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's just so weird when you react, you know, in an unexpected way to something, especially when you're, you know, we're card-carrying physicians.
Well, and yeah, I think by my mid-40s, I have a sense of, you know, how to have a drink at a party.
Right. Yeah, it shouldn't knock you on your behind.
Right.
That's for sure. Gosh. Do you have a quick life hack that you've discovered that you think the listeners might use?
You know how sometimes on the weekends, you have a lot to do, like around the house, but you also want to relax. And you're not sure really where to start. And a lot of times too, that's when I run my business or do writing. So my life hack is about setting a timer for 20 minutes. You can actually get a lot done in 20 minutes, okay. Like clean the bathroom when the timer goes off.
Yes.
Then do something fun, like take a walk or sit with coffee and read. And then you just switch to something else. Mm-hmm. And 20 minutes, if you're working on something that's a little bit longer, if you're still feeling good about it, you can just hit it for another 20 minutes. The other reason 20 minutes is key is if your break includes something like Netflix, you're not going to go through a whole show. Because if you load another show, you know, you're not getting up to switch your activity. Mm-hmm.
As soon as that new show starts, you're in for another however long it is. Yeah, totally. That is so good. And I think that that might be particularly helpful for people who tend to be a little bit OCD, because I have those tendencies. I don't know if I would really qualify for a diagnosis of it, but I definitely let things weigh me down inside my head. So I will get overly dreadful about a task that I have to do and feel really bad that I want to relax and I am, you know, I'm going to relax for a while, but it's kind of ruining my relaxation because I know I have to get to this thing, but I don't want to get to that thing because I really deserve some relaxation. And it just can kind of spiral out of control in my head. But if I tell myself, okay, I'm going to sit here for an hour, I'm not going to feel guilty that I'm relaxing. And when an hour's up or 20 minutes or whatever, then I'm going to switch to another activity, do it for a limited time so I don't have to dread that either, and then get back to doing what I want. And that would just be a really good mindful way to capture those thoughts and kind of reel them in. What have you been loving lately that you think the listeners might love too?
I think in general, I've just been really working on mindfulness and being kind to myself. A lot of that is I've spent like 9 months working on a manuscript. And it's interesting because I used to sort of coach patients on how easy it was to be mindful and just meditate for 5 minutes, but I wasn't even doing it myself. Mm-hmm. No one ever bought into the 5-minute approach, whereas now I talk about how it's one of the most difficult things I do to work into my day and to keep that mindset. And I share stories sort of similar to these about how, you know, it's a process. It's really a practice. And just when I think I have it together, like just I had told that story about taking my dog's pills at a yoga class because the teacher asked us why we were all there. And I said how now I'm so much more focused and on track. And then I went home and I realized I still had her waiver, you know, that paper they make you sign. I still had it in my bag. And I was like, wait, I gave her a paper. Well, I handed her the lab slip for my blood work that my doctor had given me earlier the day. So, I mean, mindfulness keeps you humble. That's for sure.
Oh, heck yeah. What is the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Well, I really thought about this one. And again, just because this year I've focused so much on mindfulness and what my yoga practice means to me, my teacher, Justine, really introduced me to the whole concept of ahimsa, which is about nonviolence. And that would include nonviolence to self, in that practicing some self-kindness and compassion. So when it comes to some of this OCD stuff, I always got very focused on, you know, these are just thoughts. I'm a bad psychiatrist because I can't control these thoughts, or like I'm an imposter because I tell people what to do and I'm doing this anyway. But with taking the nonviolence to self approach, she really just said, hey, that's Candace's brain just doing its thing. And I hear her say that all the time when I catch myself sort of start to obsess. And it just takes away all the angst about it. This is a quirky thing that my brain does. Hey, isn't my brain interesting? Rather than I'm a bad person for having this thought.
Kind of takes the shame out of it. Yes. Yes. This is a thought that I have to grapple with, but this does not define who I am or make me bad. Ooh. That is so good. So I want to hear a little bit more. I don't know if you've told us all you wanted to tell us about how you feel like mindfulness has improved your OCD. Is there something that you do on a daily basis? So you're doing yoga on a daily basis. How did you come to find that as your key?
I think that when people think of yoga, they think of sort of twisty pretzel stuff, maybe in a hot room. Or when you start to learn more about yoga, a lot of it is about breathing practices, meditation, and really conscious movement. And I didn't like yoga and meditation right away, I can tell you, because my mind was never like how I thought it was supposed to be. You know, after you sit for, if you actually take the time in your schedule for sit for 20 minutes, you expect to be all zen at the end. And that's just not how it works. My mind was never calm. But when you learn about sort of noticing and breathing through it and just continue to do little things over time. And even now, I meditate most days, but a lot of it is just general self-care that you build in through the day. You learn to just sort of not have to deal with everything right away. I was a very much, here's my to-do list. I have to get it done. It has to be off my to-do list. You know, if something's distressing, I can just sort of sit with it longer. And it's sort of interesting. It's very different than what I expected.
What is one surprising thing about you that nobody would be able to tell just by looking?
For somebody who's like now a mindfulness yoga guru, I really love songs with explicit lyrics. Just love them. I think because it helps me when I'm working out, and it's one way to sort of get out some of my anger, because yoga has taught me like, wow, I'm really angry about stuff and that's okay. But particularly if they're genius about working it into the lyric, you know, like Cardi B, Lizzo. Yeah, not just the F word to swear, you know.
Yeah, not gratuitous, but cleverly interwoven in amazingly interesting lyrics. Yes, I like that too. I never put it into words before, but I hear you.
Yeah, so the next time you head into work, you'd be like, I'm going to rock that S like cardio. You know, it just it makes me laugh.
I love it. Tell the listeners where they can find you. What is your website and where else can you be found online?
My website is howtoshrinkashrink.com. I have a blog on there and some other information about my practice. I am learning more about Instagram and Twitter. I'm Good Enough Doc on those. And Facebook is just my name, Candace, C-A-N-D-A-C-E, good, G-O-O-D, M-D.
All right. Very good. Well, I will link to all of those in the show notes. Candace, thank you so much for taking the time to be with me today. Thank you so much for the good that you're doing for the college kids of this country right now. And I just wish you well.
I really had a lot of fun. Thank you very much. You too.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for listening to the Fancy Free podcast. Wasn't Candace great? I love her transparency and her laugh. Make sure that you check out fancyfreepodcast.com, the show notes for episode number 36, so you can learn more about Candace and her practice and her blog. Next week on the show, we have Shelley Knight, and she has a podcast called Positive Changes, a Self-Kick Podcast, and she's the author of the book Positive Changes, a Self-Kick Book. You guys, she is absolutely delightful. We laughed our heads off during this interview, and I think you're going to love it. Also, she has a lovely British accent, so that's really fun. Remember to subscribe to the show so that new episodes pop into your feed each week. And earlier today, I dropped a faith bomb in my podcast feed, and it was way out of my comfort zone, but I did it because I had some bonus content with my conversation with Esther Getz, and we talked about our faith and where our hope comes from. And I just thought I wanted to tell you a little bit more about that, considering we're living in some pretty scary times right now. So if you are in need of a shot of hope, or if you're curious about my faith, then check out bonus episode 7. It's not episode 7, it's bonus 7. And it's called Hope in the Face of Coronavirus and COVID-19. Remember that if you have a story to tell, to drop me an email at notfancy@fancyfreepodcast.com. And if you want more connection and laughter and sharing and camaraderie, please request to join the Fancy Free Facebook group. It's a private group where we laugh at ourselves together. We answer a question of the week each week, and it's a lot of fun. The question of the week this week is, what is your biggest mom fail? In honor of Candace leaving her daughter at Barnes & Noble. I would love it if you'd follow the Fancy Free Podcast on Instagram and tell at least one friend about the show that you think would get a good laugh and would love the show. Have a great week, and remember, no one is as fancy as they look.